I want to talk about still a little more about Matsu Vishasa. We'll do that in a couple of minutes, maybe. But also, I think I said after that, I wanted to do very quickly speak about chutz, and again, trying to separate the components. So that's just, I'm not going to give you so much on that, at least not now, but a little bit. The Mishnah, on Pei Beis Omid Aleph through Pei Beis Omid Beis. This is after the Mar Makomos that we're in still on mitzvah and isur legaresh, and also the Masu Grishasa, which either we'll do today or Tuesday. So a little bit on the question of chutz and reyach haget, and get me ava, just so that we should, we're referring to. So that's the Mishnah on Pei Beis Omid Aleph, Reb Lazar and the Chachamim, and especially the Shaka V'Tarya on Pei Beis Omid Beis, both chutz or hareyat muteres, l'chol adam, osur l'chol adam, that whole question. And Tosis there, on Pei Beis Omid Beis, very, very controversial passage in Tosis, that's Pei Beis Omid Beis, afilu lo nisgar she'ela mi'isha psula l'kahuna. I may add to this, but again, for now. And then, the question of Reach HaGet more generally, is that Doraisa Drabanan, what is it, based on? So the Rambam in Hilchos Geirushin, Perikil Halacha Aleph, you can look up the parallel of the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra, what is it, Simen Kuf Nun Sif Gimel and the Gra Sif Kat Nir Aleph. But the Rajba, in particular, disagrees with the Rambam. Pei Dalet Omid Beis, Dibra Masal Ketzad, and also his comments about Rabbeinu Chananel on Pei Dalet Omid Beis, the Rajba, and the Tshuvas Arivash, which I think we already have here, in part in the first Mar Makomos, again, Simen Shin Mem Ches, where he discusses, this issue as well. On the Get Me'ava part of it, the Michas Chinuch, makes reference to some of the Mar Makomos, but the bigger discussion, as I mentioned, is in Sefer Mitzvos Rav Sajigon, Asei Ayin Gimel. It's a very, very long piece. When you want to read Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlo, it's always very fascinating, always very, speculative, frankly. But, he really brings up very interesting things. So you have to learn a little bit how to skim. But that's a good, discipline, to master. You also have to know when and how to skim, and when dafka not to skim. Like you never skim a Rambam or a Rambat. But you can skim a Baruch and Fischel Perlo if you can do it skillfully. Okay. So it's quite a few pages, but they're just interesting, suggestions along the way. So I'll pick out some of them. Also the Tshuvas Maran Bulublin, which they're referring to, Simen Kuf Chaf Gimel, and also on the whole, issue of Reach HaGet and so on, and, you should also just look, there's a very, very interesting piece in the Avnei Miluim. I think it's Kuf Lamed Zayin Aleph, and especially in the Haggah there. I'm not sure if he wrote the Haggah. It seems like he didn't write the Haggahs in the Avnei Miluim. I don't know if somebody has more bibliographical, expertise about this. Now, I don't think it's so difficult to figure out, but if somebody knows more than I do, they could. Where's Binyamin? There he is. Binyamin, you don't have Tani here, but know anything about the Avnei Miluim, the Iksos, when he published the Iksos during his lifetime, and of course he, the Mishalim Nesivos, but the Avnei Miluim was published posthumously, and I think the first half was really like a clear ksaviad, which needed a little bit of tweaking, and I think the second half needed a lot more tweaking. And I think the family turned to Talmud, Muvak that he had, and he did a lot of the tweaking, and I think that's where if I recall my reading of the Hakdamos back in the day, I think that's where. Does this sound familiar, or are you not familiar with this whole parsha?
Just the Ksosa.
What?
Just Hakdama,
the Ksosa. Yeah, the Hakdama, the Ksosa, of course, is very, very famous. Actually, the Hakdama of the Talmud is actually very interesting about Hilchos Teshuva. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. Inspire Binyamin to do some further research. So my impression is that the Ha'aros are from the Talmud, but I think it's not always clear whether it's his Ha'aros or his Ha'aros in the name of like the Torah Shebaal Peh of the Ksos. Okay, I'm leaving it to Binyamin to try to pique his curiosity, so he'll do the hard work for us. Yeah, is that true?
I think it was his son-in-law Shear.
It was what?
Shear.
No. So Shear, as he's known, last name was Rappaport. He was the son-in-law, and he also writes, I think, in the Haggadah. He also, played a role in preparing, the manuscripts for publication, and he also wrote. You're right. I mean, he also wrote a mafteach, I think, and in his mafteach he has some ha'aros. Now, what I'm referring to is not Shear, the son-in-law, but I'm trying to remember the name. I don't remember the name offhand, but it's very easy to come by. You look at the Hakdama, you'll see it. But a Talmud, Muvak, who played a bigger, more prominent role, especially in Chelek Sheni, and I think, and definitely in the Ha'aros. I just am not sure if it's really the Avnei Miluim or it's really his Ha'aros on the Avnei Miluim, or it's his Ha'aros, based on the Torah Shebaal Peh. So, but you're right, Shear did play a role. The son-in-law was, very, very appreciative, relationship with his father-in-law, which is a good thing, he speaks very eloquently about him, and he put in a lot of work, too. But the son was involved, the grandson was involved, the son-in-law was involved, the whole family were involved in the Ksavim, which, is a huge impact for, the benefit of Klal Yisrael. Okay, anyways, so that he has a Kuf Lamed Zayin Aleph in the Ha'aros, he has a really fascinating formulation also that we'll speak a little bit about. Okay, these are just, things that we're going to go back to during the year in other contexts, but we're all part of the Hagdama in the sense of breaking down some of the bigger issues of Abishas. Okay, so
it's Mohari Oz Exil Sen.
Say that again. What do you got there? That's what it is.
He wrote some Hagdamos in this.
Enzel Sazmir or something. You can understand why the name didn't stick in my memory. it's easier to say Shear for sure. That's it.
This wrote some of the Haggadahs.
This is the Hakdama of the son, who's telling you, "Oh, it's terrific that we got the son of this Talmud, right,
yeah,
to help with the right." And he says that he put out the Haggadahs. Right. I just don't know whether that means they're his or they're, in the name of or an elaboration of. Or it could be the HVHVHVH. All right. So what's the name again?
I can't pronounce Exel. It says Mermis.
Yeah, it's a hard name. Okay, but either way, it's definitely a good contribution. Okay. So we're going to try to do that. And then after that, probably we'll move to Shtaros, the Shtaros part. We'll try to coordinate that with, the Rav Meir and Rav Elazar and the beginning, as well. And then we'll circle back to the things that we, missed in the beginning. Eventually we'll, it'll all work out. We hope. I know I do still have some, obligations from previous years. But not because the Hakdama didn't fit. Right? I'm looking at Eitan. He's, he's being neutral. He's not. No, I'm just joking. Okay, so let's. What I want to do first is let's go through the Shaklev Vatarik we started. Baruch was in the middle of, was in the middle of reading. So let's finish that Shaklev Vatarik and raise some questions. Then I want to go back to Masu Gesholso anyway, because that's you'll see why in a minute. And then I want to come back to the different, you know, more specifically to the shitos here. So far, I think we're up to the two dots, right, Mark? So what we've seen so far is what? If you have to summarize it, you have the Mishnah. You have, in the Mishnah, you have three deos, right? It sounds like, you know, if you had to break up the Mishnah, you know, three deos are three equal deos, or how would you break it up? For sure. But I'm saying, if you just had to, like, characterize the Mishnah, would you say there are three shitos, or there are three shitos? Or, you know, are they equally three shitos, or, like, you know, mostly, like, two shitos?
Whichever
you prefer. Right. No, definitely doesn't matter what I prefer. It's, you know, but what's, like, what's your... Meaning, what I'm really asking in a different way is... you know, is the gap between, like, say, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva, you know, the same? Are these three different conceptions, or one, or details about one conception, or is there reason to think that maybe we're dealing with two, you know, perspectives, you know, and one of the perspectives, you know, kind of is broken down in terms of the detail? They might be important, but you understand what I'm saying? Oh, okay, that's an interesting way to break it up. I never would have broken it up that way, but that's interesting. Because, again, you're looking at it from the perspective of the psukim, which is fine. So, again, Matza Isha, you know, Noah Heimena, you know, is less... But on the other hand, it is based on Bahayim Lo Timsachein Be'ena, right? Okay, but what I would have said, what I'm really looking for, that doesn't mean it's correct. I mean, that's what we're kind of weighing. It's more... like an instinctive reaction, not completely instinctive, it's also based on facts, but it's more of a, like a formulation, you know, contemplation, speculation kind of a question. And that is, like, it seems on the surface, or this is the question, that what?
That Beit Shammai is related to Erva and everything under the moon.
Right, exactly. That Beit Shammai is qualitatively different. Beit Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are a group, you know, and that Beit Shammai, you know, is fundamentally different. Now, we might end up reassessing that, you know, based on different view, or at least according to some of Farshim, in either direction. Right? We might end up thinking, you know, that even Beit Shammai is just, you know, a reason, although he has less reasons. It's a quantitative difference. Or we may end up thinking that the rationale of, you know, of Beit Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, right, is more, you know, than meets the eye, you know. Either because, let me say it this way. So what I'm really saying is on the surface there's a huge, you know, gap, you know, between Beit Shammai and the other two. And you could take the position if you wanted to be, and I don't think it, you know, it's difficult to argue this at all. I think it's actually, again, instinctively or intuitively, you know, what everybody would think to begin with. And that is that, you know, Beit Shammai is saying something fundamentally different than Beit Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. That Beit Shammai is not only quantitatively limiting, you know, the grounds for divorce, which of course he is, in a very severe way, whereas the others two are way more expansive. That's a quantitative difference. But that also qualitatively, you know, he's saying something very distinctive. What he's really saying is that the grounds aren't just more limited, they are substantive and go to the core of the kedusha, or the viability of the ishus, and these are still two different things also. The viability of the ishus and the, you know, kedusha, you know, of the ishus. And that, you know, in some respect, you could even make the argument, you know, that, let's just say it this way, that, you know, for Beit Shammai, you know, it's all about the Hagdara, you know, of Ishus, you know, itself, right? In two directions, let me explain, meaning that, you know, other than Davar Shebe'erba, right, this is like a permanent, you know, Kinyan, Chalos, definition, you know, etc. And it would take something... you know, monumental and anti-definitional, right, to, you know, to alter that. It's almost like misleading, you know, that there is, you know, an out clause, you know, in Ishus. And that out clause is not only, you know, limited in terms of, you know, what it can be, but it is something that goes to the heart and core, right, and essence of what Kiddushas Ishus is all about. And that, you know, number one, because, you know, there might be an Isur Sota, you know, in the continuation of this marriage. And even if we were to be a little more flexible about that, which we'll get to in just a second, you know, if it isn't that, it's something, you know, at least close to that, you know, in terms of objectively, like, destroying, you know, what we consider to be, you know, singular about that bond of Baal Ki Ishto and you know, what, again, what a life of Kedusha, you know, is intended, you know, to be. So, whereas, or like as an initial reaction, Hikdicha Tavshilo seems like, you know, pretty trivial and almost like a silly, you know, frivolous, you know, reason to get divorced. It doesn't seem like it has anything to do, well, it doesn't have anything to do with the Kedusha part, you know, in a more direct way. There's no Iser, there's no, like, you know, anti-definitional aspect. You know, so like our initial, and if it just means what it means, namely that she burnt, you know, the stew or whatever that is, as I say, it's a little bit shocking in its frivolity. And maybe, you know, what it's really telling us in the extreme is that, you know, you don't really need a justification, you know, to get out of the marriage. Now, again, that still doesn't explain why you don't need a justification. Right? Maybe psychologically, you know, it's better for the goal of a Kedushas Ishus, you know, that this be, you know, that there always be an exit clause irrespective of, you know, the objective, compelling, you know, nature of the grounds for divorce, you know, in which case we can kind of salvage. It's a little complicated because there's so many factors here, but we could kind of salvage, you know, the impression that, you know, it should have required much more. Maybe it doesn't require much more because, in the end of the day, you know, psychologically, you know, that would have been counterproductive even to the goal. Or no, does it? In its most extreme, you could say, you know, kiddushin is an act of volition, and for the Baal, gerushin is an act of volition, and, you know, even if it's counterproductive and counter kedusha, in the end of the day, this is, you know, if when you have a kinyan and you have a, you know, a creation of this sort, or just in general, then it's an act of will, and he has the right. That's like the most extreme, the most extreme, I guess, gap between Beis Shammai, you know, and Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, excuse me, would be to say that for Beis Shammai, you know, I'll say it in the most extreme, and then we'll go backwards from there. For Beis Shammai, it's only actual, literal, you know, evidence-based, you know, davar shaveirva, you know, and it's, you know, anti-definitional, and there couldn't have been any kind of other, you know, excuse. So both quantitatively, factually, it's very, very limited, and conceptually, you know, if anything, this exception, because of the limited nature and the character of the exception, proves, you know, the bigger rule, you know, which is that basically this is, you know, an enduring, you know, ishus. And the only way that it ever won't be is in this extreme, you know, where it's just been corrupted, you know, from within, you know, and so on. If that's the most extreme, and then you would have like the most limited view of the circumstances, we'll get to that in just a second, as well as, I say, an understanding of, like, you know, the integrity of the ishus, you know, in a certain way. And the most, let's say, extreme opposite view for Beis Hillel is to say hikdicha tavshilo means what it says, as we'll see soon. Others, you know, think it doesn't mean that because they think it's inconceivable. You know, so they think it means, you know, a kind of reflects, let's say, a mered or, you know, irredeemably, you know, deteriorated, you know, relationships between the parties, meaning it's, you know, kind of a, you know, a, kind of has a nasty, you know, tinge, an intentional tinge to it. Again, there's a range of how we would understand that, which has intriguing, you know, commands our interest from other points of view in terms of, like, what are the expectations in this relationship that are considered to be, you know, soured by one side as opposed to more trivial things. We'll get that in a second. But again, in the other extreme, it would be, no, this is a kinyan, it's an act of volition. You know, we may like it, we may be happy, or we may be, you know, unhappy, but in the end of the day, you know, even trivial, frivolous, siknihatachilo, you know, allows him, you know, to divorce. And I guess the most extreme conceptually way to say this would be, and yeah, it is terrible, and, you know, it's not a psychological, you know, investment, you know, that Nebuch has, you know, a downside. It's, no, it's not even that. It's just, you know, he created it, you know, as an act of Ratzon, and he can end it, he can terminate it as an act of Ratzon, you know, and it's not more complicated than that. That would be the other extreme. Yeah. Right, so wouldn't even, right, maybe it wouldn't even be Ikdikot Tavshila, except that we're not dealing with Rishayim, you know, Gemurim, hopefully. So it would be Heichatimsi, but, you know, one with, it's a great point, it's a good question. Certainly the Mefarshim are going to say that Ikdikot Tavshila means more than you think, you know, will argue as you do, why not just say you could divorce for whatever reason. I think other Mefarshim might say, like, you know, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, he's not going to do this just because we're not assuming that people are Rishayim. You know, so we're trying to figure out, like, you know, whether it's, you know, acting in the whim, you know, or in the moment, you know, or something which, again, we might want to prevent for, you know, in other ways, like we discussed the other day, Sefer and all the requirements of get, in addition to other things. But they'll say, like, you know, this is a, you know, he's not a Russia, like we had, you know, but he's, you know, but, right, these are not in any way grounds. That's what you would say. Now, of course, in before I take the other question, let me just say, you know, and where does Rabbi Akiva, like, fit in, you know, to all of this? So, you know, looking at it objectively, you know, is Matzah Isha Na'a Himena better or worse than Ikdicha Tavshila? Depending on what Akdisha Tavshilo means, and depending on what, you know, Matza Isha Na Heimenu means. You know? So again, if we were to continue with this extreme, right, and we were to put Rabbi Akiva, you know, together with Beis Hillel, and sharply contrast it with Beis Shammai, so we would consider that to be, you know, frivolous and offensive too. You know, albeit in a slightly different way, right? In one case, it's, you know, sounds like you know, a momentary, you know, offense or you know, not even an offense, but, you know, mood, you know, that he's acting upon, you know, and in the other, you know, there's more of a grounds, I guess, and it's also a little more offensive, frankly, at the same time, you know, the lack of loyalty, the sense that, you know, he, well, like he's on the lookout, you know, for doing better. Is, you know, is from a Kedusha point of view, is in some respect more offensive. However, all of these things, you know, might be. So again, you also might say that maybe there aren't two views. Maybe there are three views. And that maybe, you know, either Beis Hillel's Ikdicha Tavshilo or Rabbi Akiva's, you know, Matzah, you know, Isha Na Heimena, you know, are, you know, one is more frivolous, and the other one is, you know, not Davar Shebe'erva, you know, but, you know, has greater substance. Okay, so the idea that either Hikdika Tavshilo or Isha Matzi, we're going to document all these in the Mefarshim as we go forward, but probably not today, I don't want to get to the Shaka V'Tarya, but it's the way we're thinking about it, again, you know, Hikdicha Tavshilo, in that sense, would be like, you know, either like, you know, an act of mered to annoy him, to kind of, you know, provoke him. It, you know, reflects a kind of, rancor or dismissiveness, you know, nastiness. Obviously, that's a problem. Hostility, rebelliousness. Right. What about something in between where it's like, you know, this, like not taking seriously, you know, the expected, let's say, splitting of functions, you know, in the home. I'm not getting into the question, you know, of who's supposed to do the cooking and whether that's a halachic, you know, that's not what I'm saying. But let's say all things being equal, this was the division of labor, you know, for whatever reason. And it's not coincident, you know, either. The woman and gender issues in halacha, being the woman is considered the akaris habayis. That doesn't mean that individuals, you know, have to be held, you know, in a very rigid way, you know, to, you know, some of the implementation of those roles. The broader roles, you know, are, of course, very important. They do represent an ideal. How exactly that breaks down in terms of individuals and whether social norms and other opportunities or individual relationships, you know, Matt, we can discuss that another time, but that's not really what I'm talking about. But the point is that, you know, if this is perceived as like not just an arbitrary example and not just as an example of like, you know, deliberate hostility kind of provoking him or being dismissive of him. Those are different too, by the way, obviously. We just can't, you know, spend so much time on each nuance. But let's say it's more like, oh, this is the division of labor, you know, and, you know, this kind of a rejection, not of the specific aspect of that, but like the bigger aspect, you know, of that. So that could be an issue, like even a little bit, you know, not so personal, but in the ishus, but zam, dover shebe erva. But, you know, it is like an issue in, you know, in the ishus, you know, in a broader way. So you have to see how hikdicha tavshilo is understood by Mefarshim. It's intriguing. You know, historically it's intriguing, but more importantly, conceptually it's intriguing in terms of some of these questions. The personal side or the, you know, the division of labor, you know, the sense of, you know, not accepting, you know, the role, the expected role, you know, and again, I don't mean on an individual level, I mean in a bigger way. That's in terms of Akdicha, you know, Tavshilo. In terms of, either way, it's, you know, does it ever have the possibility of getting closer, you know, to the Ervas Davar, you know, of Beis Shammai, right? So that is what I made the suggestion the other day, you know, that's full circle. So I'll get back to that in a minute. But I'm trying to perceive, you know, let's let it be, you know, perceived for the moment as somewhere kind of in between, not just like you can do whatever you want, it's trivial, it's frivolous, but like, oh, you know, there are some vexing, you know, issues in the personal interpersonal relationship of the parties, or, you know, some sense of like, you know, disrupting the expectations, you know, of how the marriage would function, let's say. But those are possibilities for Ikdicha Tavshilo. What about Matza Isha Noa Heimenu? Do you have that kind of a parallel too? So I think there are two elements. Number one is, you know, can you interpret Matza Isha Noa Heimenu not in terms of, you know, physical beauty, you know, or, you know, again, some more superficial, you know, factor, you know, but, you know, not on the sense of, you know, again, conduct and behavior. Or, like, you find this person, you know, unpleasant, and you find another person, you know, more admirable, somebody you respect more, who you're, you know, able to develop a greater bond with, not for, you know, physical, trivial, superficial issues. We'll get back to that in a second. That's, sometimes you can't ignore those either, but, you know, all things being equal. But as I say, in terms of, you know, na'eh, you know, in terms of, you know, midos, tovos, you know, character, beliefs, we'll see echoes of this, particularly in, you know, Rambam and others. But there's also a comment of the Ibn Ezra. If somebody has the line of the Ibn Ezra, Chaim, you have the line of the Ibn Ezra? How does our Ibn Ezra interpret, you know, Imlo Matzachin Be'enav? Yeah, Chaim, you have it? Stephen?
Shehi Hefech Toldato.
Shehi Hefech Toldato. Right, so that has nothing to do with, you know, physical beauty, like a roving eye, attractive, physical attractiveness, you know, something, you know, which is a real factor in people's conduct and behavior, you know, whether it's good or not, it's a factor. But still, in the context of an existing, you know, marriage, obviously it's we strongly disapprove, you know, that people at that point, you know, where there's already a bond, you know, should be affected, you know, by, you know, that kind of a you know, physical factor. So the Ibn Ezra, right, is going out of his way to tell you that the issue isn't physical, right, the issue is in terms of compatibility. Correct? One more time, what does he say? Hefech toldato means she's, you know, in her nature, character, right, incompatible. There's a certain incompatibility, you know, in the marriage. That's not ervas davar beishamai. And, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, hikdicha tavshilo, you know, either, right? And it could be something that is very serious. Are you supposed to struggle to overcome that? You know, can you overcome that, you know, if once it becomes, you know, a factor? These are very fundamental, you know, questions, both in terms of the possibility of gerushin or maybe even mitzvah lagarish under certain conditions, like if the alternative, you know, is the inability, like, to overcome that, you know, etc. So, again, whether na'ut is in terms of, you know, midos tovos and frumkeit and yiras shamayim and, you know, all those things, or whether it's, you know, personal compatibility in a more, you know, character way, that's different, you know, than the simple pshat, which is, you know, he found, you know, he's already in a marriage, you know, and improperly, you know, he, you know, is still kind of looking to see, you know, even on a more physical level, you know, if he can improve, you know, his, or consider what he considers to be improving, you know, his lot. That's obviously extremely offensive and disloyal, and it, you know, obviously reflects, you know, that the bond that he should have been, you know, interested or actually building. We talked about, you know, Naki Yalabeso, you know, the habituation and the sense of appreciation and the mutual experiences that a couple shares that, you know, that hopefully, you know, bonds and binds them, you know, together. You know, that's part of their growth, the fact that they experience things, you know, together in a certain way, the challenges, you know, and, you know, the good and the bad, and just plain, you know, the middle. So what I'm trying to say is, so the more you consider either, now again, do you have to have, is it possible to have a more frivolous ikdicha tavshilo and a more fundamental, you know, matza isha na himenu, or the opposite, you know, a more serious, you know, hikdicha tavshilo, and a more frivolous, you know, and unacceptable, even offensive, you know, matza isha na himenu? The answer is absolutely. Right, so, you know, whether we're dealing in theory, you know, we could have three shitos, you know, in the Mishnah. You know, Beis Shammai, who basically says this is an enduring relationship, you know, unless it's counter, you know, Kedusha and anti-definitional and kind of falls apart on its own. That would be an extreme if we hold Beis Shammai. I'm going to revisit that in a moment. And then a shito, which says, you know, this is an act of volition. You know, and, you know, whether we like it or are happy with, I think everybody will agree that to divorce for frivolous reasons is something that, you know, not only do we discourage, but we may even, you know, perceive harshly. We'll get to that. Sanui and the Girsa in the Gemara, you know, etc. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work, right? And it doesn't mean, you know, that, you know, if that's really the way you feel, you know, that maybe it isn't even the right thing, you know, to do. You know, even if we disapprove of the value system, let's say, you know, that makes this a factor, you know, that would push you, you know, in this direction. So, you know, there may be two perspectives and there may be three perspectives. You know, there's Mutz, you know, Dover Shaberba. There is, you know, the frivolous view. And then there's the kind of in-between view, whether it's, you know, on the interpersonal level, you know, where there's really an objective, substantive, you know, problem. There's a, you know, whether that's, again, interpersonal, matza isha, nahemeno, you know, either for character, religious reasons, or just, you know, personal incompatibility, or whether it's ikdicha tavshilo, maybe the relationship has, you know, has soured and there's a lot of kind of nasty, you know, things going on in the marriage, or it's simply the, again, there's a rejection of what was, you know, understood to be or what is traditionally, you know, marital roles in a way that obviously can't be, you know, overcome. So again, whether Rabbi Akiva is closer to Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel is closer to Beis Shammai, and the question whether Rabbi Akiva, you know, is in agreement with Beis Hillel, it's two different hechetimtzis, or the opposite, and if so, is there a kol shekein? You know, all of this becomes, you know, an open, you know, question. Now, having said that, we could go back to Beis Shammai, you know, also. Again, I'm not trying to confuse everybody by saying it could be this, it could be this, it could be this, but I really think it could be. And, I think there are echoes of it, and I think it's really important. So, so far we've portrayed, you know, Beis Shammai, and I think correctly so, you know, as representing a certain, you know, extreme. And, you know, we started out by portraying Rabbi Akiva and, you know, Beis Hillel as representing the opposite extreme. Even then, as I say, the opposite extreme and also without any kind of, you know, larger explanation, or maybe you don't need a justification, that's the most extreme. Okay. Then what we've done after that is we've tried to moderate, you know, Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva in two directions. Okay, number one, the content, meaning ikdicha tavshilo doesn't mean nothing or anything. You know, maybe it really does have a more substantive, you know, aspect. Maybe, you know, matza isha nahemena, you know, has a more serious and substantive, you know, aspect. And again, even though that doesn't rise to the level of, you know, objectively, you know, neutralizing Kedusha in the marriage, like Davar Shebe'erva, you know, but obviously that, you know, gives you a completely different perspective about, you know, how fast and loose we're being. There is another possibility, too, and, that, and then in addition to that, what we've just said now, which is, you know, are Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva the same? Are they different in regard to that issue? And if so, like in which direction? But I think there are two other adjustments that we might make. One is that even if we were to take, you know, the more, you know, as I say, frivolous perspective, and certainly we would be disapproving and it would be discouraging in terms of people's characters under these conditions, but still it would work, etc. You know, there may be you know, it's not just, it may just be, this is what I was alluding to before, not just, you know, well, it, you know, in the end of the day, you know, there are Hilchos Deos issues or whatever, but in terms of, you know, exemplary behavior, you know, behavior to be emulated, you know, behavior consistent with, you know, Avodas Hashem and being, you know, a person who is B'Tzelem Elokim and certainly in the Tatio, you know, Dei Lehidamos. But at the end of the day, this is, you know, from a Gerushin point of view, you know, it's a kinyan, and even if it's a chalos, and it's voluntary, and, you know, consequence of that is that you can, there's an exit strategy. Yeah. So it, that's an extreme. The other possibility is that even if it is for more, the, even if the grounds are more frivolous, and unacceptable, and we're disapproving, as I said before. Maybe the reason or the rationale why they're still acceptable, you know, is something that needs to be provided. And then you need to say something like, you know, the best investment, and here I think you could say it in different ways. You know, one way to say it is like the best investment in achieving, you know, an environment, you know, of joy and of, you know, sanctity and optimism, you know, is by, you know, allowing for an exit strategy. That is, that when people feel, you know, that they are trapped or the decision that they made are irrevocable, you know, it tends to, you know, and this is certainly psychologically true, accentuate or exaggerate, you know, the negative. Whereas if there are options, people, you know, it's like a pressure cooker, you know. You just, you know, feel differently about it. And also the decision to continue, you know, is way more constructive and has the potential to neutralize or to find, you know, a proper kedusha, you know, basis, because it is a personal decision, whereas if a person feels like, you know, he's in a straitjacket and he has no choice, even that awareness, you know, is obviously not, you know, it contributes to eroding, you know, it's not conducive to, you know, rebuilding or refashioning, you know, the sense of kedusha. So you might say, yeah, the grounds are trivial, and we're very disappointed in the Baal, you know, but in the end of the day, it's not because, you know, this shouldn't, and then you're asking the question, shouldn't this have been like an enduring relationship? Like, it is that, by the way, with the Rabbanu Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. Right? That's what the Psukim, you know, are telling us, you know, in Yeshaya when they speak about, you know, there's no safer krisis in that relationship because the Dover Shebik Dusha, you know, and when you're, you know, Mekadesh, you know, a korban or give it Kedusha Saguf, there's typically no pidyon because of the intensity of the Kedusha. Why don't you have that in Ishus? Right. So if the answer is technically you just don't, it's not that level of Kedusha, or it's, you know, it was born of whatever. But what we're trying to explain now is that even if the grounds are not, you know, more profound, you know, the investment, the benefit, you know, of more voluntary, you know, approach, you know, outweigh, you know, the damage, you know, or even implication, you know, the best investment in this is a davar shebikdusha, is to allow people, you know, to have free will. Okay, so that would be an idea. And we find that some of the Farshim actually say this. We'll talk about it. You know, the Chinuch has a little bit of a different take. We're going to read all these things. But like the Malbim, for example, I think says this in his Perush, that, you know, people, you know, who stay in a marriage, even if there are some dissatisfaction, knowing that they had an option to leave, you know, that's a different experience, and one, you know, which is far more conducive, you know, to righting the ship, you know, than, you know, the opposite, you know, than being forced to stay and, you know, accentuating every problem, you know, and perceiving yourself as a kind of a victim, you know, with no options. I was suggesting something a little bit different, and that is, you know, to bring Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, one or the other, or both, closer to Beis Shammai in a different way. And that was by suggesting not only, and again, these are not mutually exclusive, I mean, they can be overlapping ideas, not only the benefits, you know, notwithstanding, you know, some of the pitfalls of, you know, making this a volitional relationship, but also, you know, looking at it from you know, the perspective of the standards of Kedusha that, you know, we hold the marriage, you know, to begin with. Meaning, instead of looking at Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, you know, as being makel in the Kedusha Sa'ishus by virtue of the ability to walk away from it, more easily than Beis Shammai, for sure, to walk away from it, and in Beis Shammai, you're not really walking away from it, it's just destroyed, it's corrupted, you know, etc., all the things that we've been saying. Maybe not to look at it as being more makel or more standard, etc., but, you know, kind of perceiving all this as a function of the high expectation of interrelationship and mutual respect, you know, and Kedusha, you know, in a marriage to begin with. And, you know, basically the idea being that, you know, if, you know, for frivolous reasons a person is willing to walk away from a marriage, right, then, you know, what kind of marriage, you know, is it? You know, and what kind of relationship, you know, is there? The very capacity to turn your back, you know, on this bond for something so, you know, trivial, or, you know, whatever it is. But again, here you can be mechalek, whether it's b'diach tavshila or matza isha na hemanu. But if the relationship is so superficial, and so vulnerable even after time, you know, then, you know, maintaining it in a way, you know, is a chucha utlula, you know, in terms of kedusha sa'ishus itself. In that sense, the davar, you know, is also, may even also be a kind, if you want to go a little bit further, a kind of erva, you know, as well. And this touches on the problem, which we're going to discuss more fully, of like grushas, you know, halev. Like it's despicable for a person, you know, to, you know, continue a relationship, you know, when emotionally and halachically, you know, he's already determined, you know, that, you know, it's going to terminate, but it hasn't technically or formally, because again, that's called what the Gemara sometimes calls grusha salei, because even though technically, again, nothing has happened, right, but there's kind of das lagarish, he's already, you know, grusha salei. The sense, it's almost like, you know, a little bit going back to the Matzu Grushaso issue, which is why I think it's connected. It's like, you know, you're using, you know, the halacha, or in this case, you know, Sheval Tasa, you know, for a heter, you know, bia, but without the kedusha, you know, that should, you know, come with it. And therefore, you know, maybe it's just a hop, skip, and a jump, you know, to say that, you know, huadin, like if somebody's, you know, bond in a marriage, you know, is such that hikdicha tavshilo is a breaks the deal, you know, then in a sense there's just an absence, you know, of kedusha and of you know, mutual respect that kedusha implies, you know, to begin with. And that, of course, is a kind of an erva in the sense that, you know, there's an implicit already grusha salev. You know, just like the Gemara uses the expression, and this, you know, this is a little bit kind of a dialectical, you know, connection to the concept of ksuva, which we've talked about in the past, you know, very briefly. Maybe my view of the ksuva, for especially according to Shita Sarambam, is that the ksuva is a, like an investment. Again, technically, just for those who don't know what I'm talking about, you know, the Gemara technically says that the purpose of a ksuva is shelo yehei kala de'einav lahotzi. Again, to, you know, at minimum, it means to prevent you from doing something rash, you know, in the heated moment, you know, which doesn't really reflect who you are, you know, puts the brakes on you and so on. But I think there's a lot of evidence in the Gemara already, but especially according to the Rambam, that while that is true, that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the real idea is not just to prevent rash, you know, behavior in a moment, it's like an investment in the sense of security that each party feels in the marriage, because the financial aspect is not so easy to walk away from, for the same reason that you put on, you know, the brakes, you know, from a rash, impulsive move, you know, so too, there's like, oh, if there are like issues in a relationship, you know, there's motivation, additional monetary motivation, you know, to work on them, you know, it's because there's an entanglement financially. So the financial entanglement is a kind of an investment, you know, that, you know, encourages emotional investment, and each side having a sense of security, you know, in the marriage. So that, bikitsur, that, I think, so in a way, the, you know, the ksuva and what I'm describing as, you know, the more liberal, we'll call it, or flexible posture on, you know, the freedom for divorce, you know, they're both compatible and opposites. Right? The point is, you know, that you want to, as much as possible, like, encourage, you know, people to work on a marriage and to invest in it, you know, and so on and so forth, take the longer view, etc. At the same time, for the same reason you want to inject, not just prevent, you know, whim geirushin or impulsive geirushin, but you want to also attain the benefits of a more invested, you know, kedusha relationship to begin with, ironically, that ends up being a reason, you know, when the conviction is there and strong enough, you know, even if we don't understand it or we disapprove of it, to allow an exit, you know, strategy. That's, both of these are methods, although they express themselves in opposite ways, that's why it's kind of dialectical, of ensuring a certain standard of kedusha in the ishus. In one case, it engenders it, and in the other case, it, you know, determines its absence, you know, as a grounds, you know, for, you know, for walking away. And of course, that's with the awareness that there's a financial price to pay, you know, which, you know, is a further reflection on, like, you know, where the relationship is and how viable it is, etc. Yeah.
The dialectic exists within Gershon also.
Say again?
The dialectic exists within Gershon also, what we've been saying about all the prepping and the details and the mechanism and process of...
I mean, that slows you down, and it's and it also causes you to think about the... 100%. Yeah. So in that sense, I say whether it's matza isha na'a heimena, like, you know, like hayitachein, that, you know, naki yelebeso shana'achas, and there's this Baal Ki Ishto bond, you know, and everything that goes, you know, with it, and, you know, and the mitzias of, you know, matzah, isha, no, I don't mean a, you know, like a glancing, you know, thought that people, it's like, you know, the losach mode issue, you know. People are people, they have, you know, in some cases flaws, we all have flaws, you know, it's natural for people to think, what if, you know, could have, you know, what about, you know, this possibility, especially in a time of difficulty. And we're not talking about that. But we're talking about, I mean, that's also obviously to the extent that you can negate that, you know, that's more ideal and more preferable. And, you know, Dine issues reflect that in a very strong way, including, you know, what seems to be very draconian, you know, to the outside world, you know, but the, you know, Isser Yichud and all the other, you know, harchakos, you know, that are not, you know, because people are primitive and they can't control their behavior, which is, you know, the way that modern, you know, people sometimes mischaracterize it. It's, you know, kind of, again, creating the same reason, naki yel lebeso, so you want to not just, you know, limit temptation, you know, so that you don't have terrible consequences, but more than that, it's part of the loyalty and the habituation and the closeness and the bond. And that's really the way, you know, to look at it. So in that sense, you know, with everything, hikdicha tafshilo, yad matza isha na heimena, when it's profound enough, you know, for a person to want to walk away, knowing all of this, you know, and with all the consequences, then, you know, to stay or to be forced to stay in a kind of we'll call it grusha salev, you know, kind of circumstance, is, you know, it's the davar part, you know, of davar sheva erva. You know, it's not sota, you know, and it's not exactly Beis Shammai, but it isn't so distant from Beis Shammai, you know, conceptually either. Okay. So that is what, you know, those are the things that we want to look for. We're not going to be able to pin it down, you know, for everybody completely, but these are issues. The issue of, you know, are Hikdicha Tavshirai and Isha Naimen, are they just trivial factors, or do they reflect, you know, realities, you know, that are thorny and substantive in some way? That's one big question. Question number two, you know, whatever you say about number one, even if you don't think, you know, that they're more substantive, in the end of the day, is the exit strategy, you know, just that, you know, a strategy and really a way, you know, in a broader sense of investing in the Kedusha of the Ishus? Or no, it really isn't. It really tells us about the limitations of, you know, permanence and endurance and even, you know, even in a Kedusha relationship, etc. And that really depends on how you understand, you know, the interpretation of some of the psukim and some of the, you know, rationales that are given. You know, whether, again, whether it's the psychology of, you know, repairing or dealing with difficulties, you know, when you have options and when you don't. Or it's the, you know, a reflection of the standards of Kedusha that will continue to prevail, you know, if nothing actually is done. You know, these are important issues. Then I want to get back to Beis Shammai for a minute, and then I'm sorry we're taking so long to poor Baruchy, like, you know, hasn't even read a line yet today. Yeah, but we'll get back to it. Yeah.
Are we saying that by the Torah giving, let's say, a Baal out to be Megarish, or let's say, Tatsachar Na Imena, that's allowing him to invest in a Kedusha Seishas of the next Ishus?
No.
So how does that elevate?
No, I'm saying two things. I'm saying, number one, there could be, as some of Farshim say, it's like a psychological thing. Namely, this is terrible, but, you know, if you say, I don't care, there's nothing you can do about it, that will make things even worse. You know, whereas the person having options and over, and therefore knowing that he's voluntarily or volitionally overcoming, you know, is strategically, you know, the best way to, and even in general for the marriage, knowing, you know, merosh, that there's always an exit strategy, you know, maybe something that keeps you on your toes and keeps you working on your marriage, or keeps you, you know, thinking in a certain way, and or knowing, you know, that there's joy and that there's, you know, meaning and so on. I'm not talking about that. We're not preparing for the second marriage. Khalil, I don't mean that at all. That's one perspective. The perspective that I'm offering in addition is that even though this is a terrible, you know, betrayal, you know, and something which we disapprove of, let's assuming it's more physical and more trivial, in the end of the day, if this is such a power, such a compelling, you know, reason for this individual, then it likely reflects, you know, that the bond, you know, of his ishus has already been severely compromised, and that the relationship is disrespectful, and it's, you know, lacking in substance, and therefore, as an enduring davar shebikdusha, it's flawed, you know, and there would be reason, you know, to neutralize it.
That's and therefore, rather as staying as a grusha salev, the Torah gives him an out at that point.
Correct, you know. And that's why I'm using the example of grusha salev. You certainly could distinguish, you know, between that and saying, oh, I'm going to continue the physical relationship even though my plan is to divorce. That could be something more specific and more cynical, but I'm kind of understanding that in a broader way to say, oh, the marriage is broken down, the level of Kedusha is, you know, is such that you're, that, you know, you made this, and yet, so what is this? This is a heter, you know, znus. Not really. I wanted to give the example that and that is, you know, the discussion of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbeinu. Hapoches mi psula, you know, b'psula mi masayim. You know, so the Gemara, the Mishnah, uses the example that that's a kind of erva, which is strange. But, you know, basically what it means is you're planning, you know, meirosh, to make it easier to walk away from the marriage. And that, okay, so say that's offensive, say it's, he's, you know, he's not a tzaddik, you know, but that's erva? You would call that erva? right? But in a way, yes, because, you know, you're kind of planning, you know, you're basically exploiting, you know, the heter isha for in a znus kind of a way, and that is, you know, a terrible thing. I would say the same thing about Reb Sajagon's take on kadesh and you know kadesha, which I say is an interesting issue anyway. And we still, you know, I made reference to Shin Nun Hey, you know, in the Rambam being before Shin Nun Vav. That's the Rambam's take on. We'll talk about that on kadesh and kadesha. But Reb Sajagon in his Parish Ala Torah says that his view kadesh and kadesha is somebody who marries, you know, with the intention of it only being temporary, meaning of you know that he's going to be megarish at a certain point, or maybe he tries to make it a tnai or something like that. Whatever it is, so okay. I mean, that doesn't sound like a very good. You'd call that a kadesha or a kadesh? Yeah, I mean that's the point. And that's, I think, why there's such sensitivity, even in, you know, Kiddushe Bia, which is the Doraisa, the Mefurish Bakra, you know, but, like, why were the Chachamim so against it in policy? It's such a strange phenomenon when you think about it. You know, Rav Mangid Amanda Mekadosh Bia, according to the Rabos of Shalrashi, you know, which we'll talk more about also, you know, they were actually, they did a remarkable, like, they were Mafkia Kiddushe Bia, like, it doesn't work anymore. So that the Chacham have that ability is shocking. Is that a general din that they held, or is it like something more specific to Kiddushe Bia? In my view, you know, it's more about actual, you know, Kiddushe Bia. So again, Rabbeinu Gersh, too, you quoted that, right? Did you quote that? Who?
Tani's
spoke about that.
Yeah.
Oh, at his engagement. At the Vort. Yeah, so I think he was quoting me, but but Rabbeinu Gershom has this line where he talks about Rav Mangan Amadam Kaddish Babia, where he says something like, you know, because it's Nus, or something like that. You know, so like when he's quoting, he you know, that is Rabbos of Shalrashi. So, meaning, in my view, it's not just the regular issue like, you know, yesh koch v'al chachamim, can they be oker? You know, it's just that Kiddushe Bia is the Din Torah and it's the Mefurish Bakra. But the tricky, it's the most obvious because it's very ishuti, obviously. It's the intimate way, it's kind of like, you know, jumping and right from, you know, Erison into Nesuin practically. On the other hand, it's the most challenging because, you know, the whole point of the Erison is that there should be a break. And they should be preparing and investing and all this stuff. So, you know, I think there are both of Shorashi, if it isn't a more general idea about Koach HaChamim, you know, especially that line, you know, it says Chutzpahu Lo or something like that. Because this is like, meaning, not just because you're defying the HaChamim and therefore, you know, you're going to get your wings clipped. It's more than that. It's you know, this is Doraisa if you can pull it off correctly. But if people are perceiving it, you know, as like a heter znus, you know, then that's exactly the opposite of what it was supposed to be. You know? And, yeah, so all these, this is like an expansion of the concept of znus in Erev. So when Reb Sajagon says that Kaddish and Kaddish is, oh, you're getting married, but you're doing it temporarily. Like all of these are kind of mechanisms of using Ishus cynically, you know, for heter znus in some respects. You know, so what I'm suggesting is, you know, that you could have that in the context of an ishus, you know, if really the, you know, the relationship is so flawed, so tenuous, so trivial, you know, that you want to get divorced because of ikdicha tavshila or you know, or there or matza isha, you know. You know, hey man, that is a way of also perceiving, as they say, in a way, you know, Rabbi Kiva and Beis Hillel are more machmir in a way than Beis Shammai, you know, because they're not saying it's easy to walk away, it's not as much of a kedusha as you think, or that doesn't impact enduring nature of the Kenyan. What they are saying is our standards are so high, this is such a sensitive, you know, area, you know, that, you know, what may look like being makel is really a shiur in chumrah or the chomer, you know, of what is ideally required, you know, and so on. Yeah.
Does everybody think that it's strange then when the Gemara talks about Kudus Ali, it doesn't say anything about Erva, quotes a pasuk from Mishlei?
So we'll talk about that a little bit. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, right. I think if it weren't like despicable, like, you know, what's the relationship between the Hilchos Deos part of this and the Hilchos Geirushin part of it? I think is what you're really asking. So again, you could say, you could dismiss those Gemara and say it's all just like Hilchos Deos. It expresses itself in the context of Geirushin, but, you know, it's really about, you know, a person being, you know, unethical and, you know, and you know, you know, you know, ain't pivalibo or mass of, you know, shavim, etc. But I do think that it starts off, you know, with that part, and the question is whether it remains, you know, in that way or not. Again, the Rambam does quote it in Hilchos Geirushin, is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, he could have easily just have quoted it in Hilchos Deos. So we'll talk a little more about that. But yeah, first the
similar. I'm very surprised that the Rambam asking that team will give it man, right? If you tell her, if you let her know about it beforehand, they won't find him wearing it for a little bit. Just what's there?
Yeah, that is a little strange. We'll talk about that a little more also. Again, right, at least he's not, you know, misleading her in a way.
Right.
But it's better and it's worse.
Right. Okay. Both
a lot of these things are both better and worse. Like Jesse's expectation, she could say no, you know, in the Ishus. But again, for Absajagon, you know, this plan, may well, like, I'm going to marry, but it's going to be a temporary marriage, you know, that's Kaddish and Kadesh, which is very, I think, very telling. Yeah, Gabe.
So for Beit Shammai, if the grounds for divorce are objective, then what would be the point of the ketubah?
Oh, that's a great question. Hold off on that one question. I have the Yerushalmi has another question. What's the Yerushalmi's question?
About Beit Hillel and Rabbi Akiva?
About Beit Shammai. Your question's a really good question. Gabe's asking, if we take Beit Shammai literally, I still didn't get back to Beit Shammai yet, if we take Beit Shammai literally, you know, so what's the point of a ksuba? Because it's not really a choice, right? I would answer that question. My way I would answer the question is because either way it adds, even if you'd still have a little bit of a problem, would be shalei kala be'inav lo tzia. And kala with a kuf, but what I would also add is that the ksuva is connected to that, but it's so much more than that.
You know, the concept not just in practice.
No, I was saying that the idea of the ksuva in the end of the day is that, it, you know, because it entangles him financially, you know, it also, you know, provides greater sense of security to the parties in the marriage. So your question is still a good question on shaloi hekalav einav, you know, lahotzia, especially if you take a very, very strict constructionist, you know, very limited view of Beit Shammai, which I'll get back to in just a second. I think it's a good question, but there's also another question to ask, which I'm going to get to in a second. What's the other question? Anybody know? Yushalmi's question. Yeah? Yossi?
The question,
does Machzer Grushaso fit in, right, according to Beit Shammai, if Beit Shammai is literal? Right? Because how do you ever get... Well, some Achronim ask the question more sharply. They say, well, you're only allowed to get divorced if there's a betrayal of the marriage. And then she's Chayiv Misa. So how is she marrying somebody else? Okay, that's not... You can get out of that one. The bigger question they're asking is, what's the point of an Iser Machzer Grushaso, right? If anyway she can't marry him because of the Iser Sota. That's Yerushalmi's question. Right? Tosis quotes that Yerushalmi, part of our Mar Makobos. That's not a problem for Beis Hillel or for Rabbi Akiva, correct? I would add, is there a het that shouldn't be any heter, you know, Machzer Grushaso? Right? That whole institution shouldn't exist according to Beit Shammai. Which is why the Rajba and the Tshuva, which I hope you've seen already, Binny?
It's just a chash of
says it doesn't mean like what Tosas seems to say it means, or what Yerushalmi assumes it means, which is that there's edim on the betrayal. You know, it's more expansive than that. So we'll get to that in just a second. So that's a great point. But so your question about the ksuba is a parallel kind of a question, and it's a really good question. What I would say is, you know, I'm not sure this answers lo ye kala be'enav lahotzia, you know, if you take the strict constructionist, you know, Beis Shammai view. But what I will say is that either way, you know, the ksuva, the doraisa aspect of the ksuva that I described before, which is, you know, it provides a sense of security and therefore contributes, you know, to the relationship and to the kedusha of the relationship, that is still true, no matter what. And the fact that, you know, there's a predeceasing, you know, aspect, you know, is important for that. And because it's you know, it's a kiyum in the ishus for the entire ishus. But the, you know, the more specific shelo yehi kalam de'enav would be a problem for Mishonai. Maybe that you'd have to drop. That's a great point. Yeah.
These discussions, like, or assume that the Mishonai are kiyum based on talking, like, it's it only allowed to do that and you came out of divorce for any other reason. There's like a missing toss-up.
Yeah, so, correct. So, you know, that's why I kept saying, correct. That, you know, this is if you take the view of Beis Shammai in the most extreme, you know, way. By that I mean two things. Number one, that Davar Shebe'erva is, or Erva's Davar, means literally the Iser, you know, Eishas Ish. There's a violation of Eishas Ish. And that we know of it, you know, through Eidim. Right? What if you know of it but not through Eidim? That's an interesting question. Right? Like, you know, of it personally, but, you know, you witness something, but you don't have Eidos. They say, Kol Shekain, or let's say you don't know, let's say you only know of it through, you know, Kol, or you suspect it, or let's say even Kinui and Stira and Eidechot Betumah. Is Eidechot Betumah enough for that? It's an interesting question. Right? It's definitely enough for, you know, the Din Sota, but is it enough for Beis Shammai's Ervas Davar, which seems to require Davar Davar, you know, that you require Shnayim Eidin? That's an interesting question. So, yeah. Number one, how do you know it is one issue. And number two, as we, you know, mentioned with regard to the Tshuva Sarajba, right, the Rajba says Beis Shammai is not only actual Ervas Davar. It could be, you know, Dvag Davar, Kiur, you know, some sort of other, you know, behavior. Although, again, clearly behavior which is short of, you know, Sota, you know, but that clearly is, you know, maritally inappropriate, you know, as opposed to, let's say, Hikdicha Tavshilo, even if you, whatever you want to say about it, you know, but like, you know, overall Das Moshe, you know, maybe even Al Das Yehudis, you know, meaning behavior that is, from a Tzniyos point of view, you know, totally unacceptable, etc. That's the Rajba's, you know, expansion. That's question number one in Beis Shammai. Like, you know, what does Beis Shammai, what really does Beis Shammai think, case-wise, is included? Is it the narrowest, or is it a little more expansive? Of course, once you say that, the Rajba himself is being the Ashev, you know, in addition to other things, the Yerushalmi's question. Again, we'll read it in Mirza Shem on Tuesday when we get back to these things more fully. Right, that's the Rajba saying, that's the answer to Yerushalmi's question. But then you say, how come Yerushalmi didn't give that up? Obviously, Yerushalmi didn't think that way, right? That's number one. Number two is the question that you're raising, which is, how do we look at this Mishnah in general? Right? So again, a, you know, extreme constructionist way to look at the Mishnah is that, you know, if there are no grounds, you know, according to Beis Shammai, there's no divorce. Right? Or, on the next level, you know, this is about the mitzvah and an iser, right? You know, when do you fulfill a mitzvah? When are you supposed to get divorced? And when are you not allowed to get divorced? Does that mean that the divorce will be chal? Less well known. On the third level, maybe it's just Eitz HaTovah, You know, it's when is it appropriate to get divorced? And it's really kind of, again, kind of like a Hilchos Deos kind of an issue. Like, you know, should a Ben Torah, should an Obed Hashem, you know, get divorced under these conditions? You understand? But, you know, the divorce would be chal no matter what. Right? So this also seems to be a major discussion, you know, in Beis Shammai. So these three questions, you know, we've talked about, you know, either Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel being, you know, a real dichotomy, or a Mekiva, a real dichotomy, or there being, you know, if, you know, one or two, you know, something in the middle for Rabbi Akiva and for Beis Hillel, or for one or the other, right? Or, you know, even if it seems to be, you know, the dichotomy, maybe the goal, you know, is Erva, Grusha Salev, something more in between, right? And now we're considering the question, maybe Beis Shammai is not quite as rigid as we thought. You know, not in terms of details, not in terms of, you know, effectiveness. What about mitzvah and isur? And what about, maybe it's just Eitzah Tova, and this is not such a, you know, crucial, you know, issue at all. Again, the Rambam deals with this, you know, in a very kind of happenstance, you know, kind of a way, you know, in the middle of the Perek in Perek Yud, you know, Hilchos Geirushin. So that would kind of lessen the gap between Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rabbi Akiva, but, you know, in the opposite, you know, direction. Yeah?
Even if Beis Shammai is telling you can't usher Megari, unless there's Erva, mm-hmm. or never Erva, could that be only about Karka? Meaning, what if the woman specifically wants to get?
Right, so that's also something to look into. Very good. That's another possibility. Is this only Bal Korcha de Isha? So we'll try to pursue all these things. Or is this even, and again, is there a difference, then that comes the psak question, who do we paskin like? Right? Do we paskin like Beis Hillel, Shammai, Beis Hillel, or Rabbi Akiva? And what about Zivug Rishon, you know, and Zivug Sheni? You know, how does that figure in? So it's very, very detailed and complicated. I've been trying to kind of portray, I guess, the conceptual fault lines in all of this. And even that's wide-ranging. But, you know, as we go forward, Nir Hashem and the Shach Mataria on Tuesday, we'll try to pin down, like, you know, actual shitos. But that's a great, that's another possible distinction. Yeah.
If in Rebbe's Pshat, the Kedusha of the marriage is jeopardized for Beis Hillel and Rebbe Akiva, so for Beis Shammai, does he think that, like, it's still, the Kedusha is jeopardized, we should tough it out and try to fix it?
Yeah. I think so. Or he would say, you know, right. I mean, it's mechudash to say that that constitutes still, you know, erva, even if it's the erva of, you know, hapoches, you know, lebesula mimasayim, you know, that that's considered, you know, znus, varayos, to say, you know, a person who wants to get divorced because of ticha tavshilo, that's, you know, kind of grusha salev, you know, in a, you know what I'm saying? In a, you know, because it is still different, as I say. So Beis Shammai may say, listen, you need something that's really a kilkul of the ishus itself, you know, and this doesn't qualify. And not that, you know, you should have a bad relationship and continue, you know, a marriage, but like you say, there's always a way to try to rectify it. And even if you can't rectify it, and you know you can't rectify it, it's still not, you know, erva, and like the greater goal, the definition of this kind of chalos, and maybe even the greater goal of upholding the sense of kedusha, would, you know, forestall, you know, saying, you know, that these are grounds, even if that was the explanation or justification. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, in Torah there is polygamy. That's 100% true. That doesn't mean... And right, I think that's a very intriguing question. That doesn't mean that the relationships, you know, that exist in each marriage, you know, isn't something which is a davar shebekedusha, you know, and something which is protected. I mean, you might ask, like, you know, from a cultural point of view, let's say, you know, it's difficult for us, you know, in the 21st century, you know, and in Western, you know, society, you know, and maybe it is more ideal. I mean, there are views that, you know, the polygamy is more of a heter, you know, than it is a l'chatchila. Again, Avos, you know, particularly Yaakov Avinu, you know, practiced it, but, you know, and the idea that, you know, it would not only be, you know, technically prohibited for Chil Hashem reasons bizman hazeh, but that given the cultural realities, even from a Kedusha point of view, it would just be unacceptable, I think emerges, you know, from this, you know. But I think what you need to say, you know, about, you know, the more objective question is that, you know, it's conceivable to, you know, have a heter of polygamy, you know, and still have high standards of Kedusha. Even then, the halacha itself says that you can't marry other wives, you know, if it cuts into or is at the expense of, you know, the quality of life, you know, with your previous, you know, wives or wife. So instead of seeing that more in a pragmatic way, I think what we would have to say is that that is also true in a Kedusha way. Meaning, if the effect of marrying more than one person, right, is to, like, turn any of those marriages, you know, more into kind of like a pretext or a matir, you know, of znus, then that would always be improper. But obviously, objectively, the halacha considers it possible, you know, for there, at least on the male side, you know, for there to be, you know, not exclusivity, and yet kedusha. Probably it's very difficult to accomplish that, and therefore it's probably very easy, you know, to lose, you know, that heter, is what I'm saying. But it's a good point. Yeah.
Maybe a Rai for what Rebbe's saying, like with Rashi quotes from Chazal with Rachel and Leah with the Dudaim, he says Lefish Zilzala b'Mishkav Atzadik, Lazach Leikavri. Like there's like a certain level of kedusha that they require.
Right. And even within that, right, there's actually it's very hypersensitive and right the whole story of you know Ahuva and Hasnua and you know that's a great point, 100%. It's to carry it off requires a tzaddik, and even he, you know, maybe occasionally, you know, isn't up to the task, you know. Of now again, Pilegesh is a different issue, right? That is somewhere in between. That's kind of a heter, you know. And again, according to the Rambam, that's, you know, limited, you know, to Melech. So I don't want to get into that whole thing right now, but the right, and the Rambam's view of Kadesh and Kadesha, which I'm going to get back to anyway, but the Shin Nun Hei, and also connected to his comments in Nukhasishos, is that the Rambam thinks that a relationship outside marriage, right, is always nus. That's a simple pshat of the Rambam, I believe, pshat of the Rambam. A huge debate on what he really meant, but so, right, polygamy is a very difficult institution in light of all this. But I think what you'd have to say, and that's what Chai is adding as well, is that, you know, you'd be challenged to do it, you know, only if you could pull it off, not just in terms of financial quality of life, which clearly is the case in the halakha, but also in terms of, you know, respect. And it is culturally difficult for us to identify with that. But apparently, objectively, it is attainable, you know, for, you know, under certain conditions. I think that's a conclusion we'd have to reach. Yeah?
Within the system of polygamy, Rabbi Akiva still says what he says.
Right. Right. I mean, he's not marrying somebody in addition. Maybe because he couldn't pull that off. What? Right. So, right. So maybe the answer is, but, you know, exactly what we're just saying now, which is like, you know, let's say I say, oh, I respect the, you know, institution of marriage, and that's why, you know, I, you know, given what I now feel, or have experienced, or whatever, you know, the only kedusha that I can justify, you know, is with, you know, this new plonus, you know, not, you know, so then, polygamy isn't an answer either, because it comes at the expense of the relationship to this. I think I'd actually reinforce that. It's a great point. Yeah.
The Rambam in Pirshei Shmos seems to—he says that's why you don't pass on like Rabbi Akiva, because you find someone better, you just marry her.
Yeah. That Rambam is saying that, but maybe the answer is
what Rabbi Akiva really means.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I guess we're gonna have to stop. Let's at least get a couple of lines in, Baruch. You know, he's you know, he didn't have to read a word. Okay. My fault. This. Yeah. But and we'll try to pin down the details of this, but at least the perspective of it. So one of the things we also have to look at in terms of the Farshim is to also look up the Poskim and Shulchan Aruch and Ebenu Ezer to see what they say, the Beit Shmuel and the, you know, Kolkas Mechokek and etc. Is, you know, are we dealing with mitzvah, a mitzvah lagari? Is this what we mean when we speak of mitzvah lagari? We already talked about the Rambam, but contrast it with like the Smak and the Tshuvah Sarah, the Makoros that I gave you to look at, plus more. Is there a mitzvah to marry if the grounds of divorce that are appropriate are there? Why would there be a mitzvah to marry, and what do we mean by that, right? That certainly is connected, you know, to the standards of Ishus, and in some respect the idea of, you know, being married to the wrong person, you know, where there can't be a kedusha between them. Right, is a problem. So the question of mitzvah, and what about Isur when those grounds, you know, are not met, whether it's Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel or Rabbi Akiva, or maybe qualitatively might distinguish between them. Are we talking about, you know, a reshus and not a mitzvah? Are we talking about an Isur? Is it either mitzvah or Isur? Is there ever really a mitzvah, you know, despite the usage of that term? Maybe the usage is about Ilchus Deos. Is there ever really such a thing in Ilchus Geirushin? And if so, you know, of the three, qualitatively, you know, how would that break down? Is there ever an Isur, you know, when you know, are divorcing, you know, without proper grounds, you know, or is it all just, you know, Eitza Tova and so on? And does that break down between the three? Okay, go ahead. So that's something to think about, which we pin down more. Rabbi Kiva Rafinam Matza Acheres, go ahead, just a couple of lines. E Dilma Ellen Daha. It's like a massive Rashi here, and everybody discusses. But okay, that's a Parshanut question, very interesting one, but not for now. Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. So that's in terms of the parshana. Okay. Then you have this interesting exchange. Go ahead. Omele Rav Papa L'Rava. Bamod v'hachazir. Okay. So, yeah. So I wanted this. I'm not going to do. We're going to have to stop in a minute. But let just is this discussion of Rav Papa and Rav? It's kind of, this is what I was alluding to a second ago, in a way, right, Baruch? It's kind of in between, right? You don't have the grounds. You know what happens if, you know, when there's no grounds? So the Havamina was what, that you'd be obligated to remarry her, right? Would there be no Gerushin, or there? What? Maybe the get is not chal, but is that what happens in the case of anus?
We make you do a kedushin again.
Right. So that's interesting. Also, is there never a havamina that the get's not chal? It's only a question of whether he would be obligated to remarry her, right? Or could it be even that the get is not chal? That's one. Number two, is this question within Beis Hillel, Rabbi Akiva, or Beis Shammai?
Explicitly Beis Shammai.
What? Not so clear. Actually, Rashi thinks that it's not Beis Shammai. The tshuva of the Rajbash that some of the Achronim point out as well, that it's Dafka Beis Shammai. Okay. Rashi, what does Rashi say here? The Beis Hillel, the Girsha. right? So that, you know, again, goes to, you know, factually what we've been discussing, but also given, you know, the, you know, presentation, which is, oh, we have Beit Shammai, we have Beit Hillel, we have Rabbi Akiva. One way to look at them is that they're all, you know, it's a technical argument about grounds for divorce. You need this, you need that, you need the next thing. True. One is more expansive, one is less expansive, but it's all quantitative, you know, and technical. Or no, that there's really a fundamental, you know, qualitative difference between, you know, grounds, what grounds of divorce, you know, mean, you know, for them. So this question, you know, with this Hava Mina, and what the Maskana is, whether it's from Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, is going to be important. So when we go back, we'll have to break that down. Yeah?
Is there, and I know this happened in multiple places in the Torah, but is there a reason that the Pasuk says, will you call? Like I know it was translated, I think, as the Beit Shammai issue, but we're saying that it's a question of whether or not it's going to work, the Gerushin is going to work.
Lo Yuchal is on the it's on the Masik Rishasa.
Yeah,
we'll get back to that. So then one more line just to, you know, Omar Le Rav Nisharshe. So this, of course, why is this here? Right. So again, it could be here because, you know, we're talking about a soured relationship and a bad, you know, situation, a bad marriage, and like this is a, you know, question to bring up. Obviously the relationship, you know, here is not conducive. So the Gemara wants to know, like, you know, what if he's thinking of marrying? This is Grusha Saleh, right? Maybe it's, you know, in addition to that, it's also connected to what I was suggesting, you know, which is, you know, an expanded idea, you know, which is, you know, the idea of, you know, if you don't give this outlet, you know, that's the equivalent of what you're kind of, you know, continuing. You know, that's a problem. Okay. Either way, as Josh pointed out before, Kari Ale, go ahead. Yeah. I mean, it's a pasuk that appears where? In Mishle. So, again, is this like a Hilchos Deos idea, and it's just applied in Hilchos Gerushin? Or this really has to do with the, you know, specifics of Ishus and Kedusha and Gerushin and Kedusha. Okay. Something to look more at. Where did the Rambam put it? How does he put it? Etc. Somewhere in between, basically, the Rambam. It's in Hilchos Gerushin. But, you know, okay, so we'll talk about that. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop here, and then we have to still talk about Rav Meir and the language of, you know, Russia. So we'll continue. We're going to finish Shaka V'Tarya first, then we're going to break it down, and then I'll get back to summing up Matzah Grushaso, then we'll move on to the chutz and get me out.